This is David Weiss for the Daily Worker Placement, and you're listening to The Game Changers, Episode 6, Farmville, Part 2. In Part 1 of this episode, we left Uwe Rosenberg at the gates of Essenspiel in 2007 with 1,000 copies of his newest game, Agricola. Set in the 17th century, players had 14 rounds to build the best gosh darn farm they could. Agricola was the heaviest game Rosenberg and his young company Lookout Games had ever produced. It was heavy in terms of the number of wooden components inside the box, as well as the brain power needed to earn a victory. If Agricola did well, it could start a new chapter in his career. But if critics and gamers thumbed it down, it could end whatever hopes he had for a full-time career designing board games. Agricola turned out to be one of the hits of Essen. All 1,000 copies sold out, with people and stores clamoring for more. By 2008, the end of its first full year of publication, Agricola had not only swept up multiple awards, including the Spiel des Jahres Complex Game Award, it had also sold tens of thousands of copies, a level of sales usually reserved for gateway games such as Catan or Ticket to Ride. How did such a complex game achieve such success so quickly? I believe it's due to a number of factors. The first, which I spent quite a bit of time on in Part 1, was due to the internet and the rise of Board Game Geek. But all that buzz and hype could easily have fizzled out if Agricola did not prove so popular with players. Above all, it's a very, very good game, full of tension and interesting decisions. Rosenberg had figured out two ways to lighten the cognitive load on players, which made the game more accessible. Instead of overwhelming players with every single possible action all at once at the beginning, Rosenberg had adapted the worker placement mechanic pioneered by Kalis and other earlier designs by starting players out with just two actions and a limited menu of options. This made the game very easy to learn and teach. Here's your farm, here are your first two workers, here are the things you can do with them. Go. Then, round by round, the number of available actions grew, and players who planned well could also make babies, thereby increasing the number of actions they could take each turn. It felt organic and very thematic. The next reason for Agricola's popularity is best explained by recounting my own first plays of the game back in 2007-2008. Someone brought a first printing of the game out to our weekly session, and I jumped in feet first, knowing little about the game except that it had a lot of buzz. I didn't win, I didn't even come close. But even so, by the end of the game, I had enlarged my house, rebuilt it out of clay, had a couple of babies, put up a bunch of fences and stables, planted some crops. I had built something. I had a sense of accomplishment that was unrelated to my score. Now that I think about it, Agricola probably set off a lot of the same brain receptors that made Minecraft such a humongous success in the decade to come. Feeling that sense of achievement is a big reward, one that players like me want to have again and again, especially coupled with the idea that next time I want to do better. That's the kind of psychological reinforcement which keeps players coming back for more. That feeling of accomplishment was accompanied by the immersion of handling the components of the game. The stone pieces were wooden, but shaped like stones. The wheat pieces shaped like little sheaves of wheat. But even better, the pigs were little wooden pigs. The sheep were little wooden sheep. How cute was that? It was a combination of cuteness and immersion which I'd never seen in a tabletop game before, where resources had just been cards or cubes. I couldn't wait to buy my own copy of Agricola from my local game store. The day it was supposed to arrive, I literally came half an hour early and walked back and forth outside the front of the store just so I could buy a copy. This was before you could pre-order games, for the most part. I paced out in front, I hung out in the parking lot across the street, and when they unchained the door, I was in and out and with my own copy, hugging it like a newborn child, only to open it to find that my copy only had cubes for everything. Cubes for resources, cubes for animals. It all looked so generic and disappointing. So for the next few months, and this is the only time I've ever done this, dear listeners, I went hunting for bits to upgrade my copy. I scoured dollar stores for toy animals so I could have enough pigs and sheep and cows. I scavenged bits from other games that looked like wheat or stones. I was obsessed. And as it turns out, I wasn't the only one, because a couple of years later, Lookout Games not only reissued Agricola with the upgraded bits, they also sold those bits separately for players who wanted to upgrade their copies. For years, owners of muscle cars and trucks had been decorating their vehicles and upgrading components in a process called pimping, a craze which started in the streets and exploded via music videos. I believe Agricola was the game that sparked the, quote, pimp my game, unquote, craze, with players handcrafting or purchasing fancier components. Heck, when one of my gaming friends had his birthday in 2008, his partner made him an Agricola-themed birthday cake. A rectangular cake subdivided by brown icing into rooms and fences and sheds, and with little icing sugar workers and animals. Eventually, publishers realized they could make money off of this, and so was born the Deluxe Edition, as well as upgrade packs. When Kickstarter launched in 2009, upgraded components were usually dangled in front of backers as stretch goals. And clearly, the strategy succeeded, because many gamers like upgraded components, even if they have no effect on gameplay whatsoever. To sum up, Agricola was a game changer due to several factors. First, it was arguably the first game to generate a significant amount of internet buzz. Next, its gameplay managed to be both accessible to tabletop newcomers as well as deep and complex for experienced gamers. Third, its accessible theme was not simply tacked on, but an integral part of that gameplay, giving players a sense of accomplishment which transcended the competitive aspect. And finally, Agricola was the first Euro that departed from the until-then standard generic cube and card components, which ignited a trend that continues today. Agricola's smash success inaugurated a new era in designer Uwe Rosenberg's career. As he had done with Bonanza, his 1997 hit card game about bean farming, Rosenberg generated an ever-flowing stream of expansions, modules, and sequels for his new cash cow, confident that fans would hoover them up. And they did. There was Farmers of the Moor in 2009, which added an additional challenge to players trying to keep their farmsteads alive by making them worry about keeping their farmers warm as well as fed. There was a long series of occupation and improvement mini-expansions, many of them suggested by fans, which gave the game even more replayability. There was a streamlined family edition in 2016, which fixed the order of appearance of new actions and reduced the variety of resources. And in 2012, he produced a special two-player version, All Creatures Great and Small, which had its own mini-series of expansions. At the same time, once Agricola hit the market, Rosenberg was ready to take the worker placement concept that had powered it and, like Bach, put it through as many variations as possible. And so, from 2008 to 2016, Rosenberg designed and Lookout Games released a series of what you would call sequels to Agricola. They weren't thematic sequels, but design sequels, each with a different twist. 2008's Le Havre, set in modern France, gave players only one action a turn, but put a lot more emphasis on resource management and building construction. 2009's At the Gates of Luoyang was set in China, with more of an emphasis on harvesting and delivering resources to customers. Ora et Labora, from 2011, was set in a medieval monastery, incorporated a circular track called a rondel, which had been pioneered by Matt Gerrits in his 2006 game Imperial. Players used the rondel to keep track of resources, and, as with Farmers of the Moor, had to clear land in order to make use of it for building or farming. The rondel and clearing mechanisms returned in 2013's Glass Road, with resources now split into two categories, and players also having to juggle role selection in as well. 2013 also saw the release of what has arguably been the most popular and successful Agricola sequel, Caverna, set in a fantasy world with players taking the role of dwarves, carving out mountain lairs, and even doing a bit of dungeon delving. Caverna also got a two-player version with sequels. Finally, in 2016, there was the massive A Feast for Odin, with its Viking theme, marking the next turning point in Rosenberg's career as he incorporated the Tetris-style tile laying, which became the foundation for his next generation of games. Each of these games was a hugely anticipated and massive hit among fans of heavy games, with All Creatures Great and Small and Cave vs. Cave doing well among lighter gamers. So, although I briefly compared Rosenberg to Bach a little while ago in his Fugue and Variations approach, the artist he really reminds me of is Pablo Picasso, whose decades-long career can also be split into various periods, where Picasso did deep dives into various themes and media. Picasso was an obsessive. Once an idea came his way, whether it was a particular color like blue or rose, a new way of representing reality like cubism or surrealism, or an ethnic style like African art or found sculptures, he would totally immerse himself in it, producing painting after painting or sculpture after sculpture until he felt he had exhausted every possibility, after which he would drop it and rarely return to it again, if ever. And so with Rosenberg. There was his car-driven period, as epitomized by Bonanza, then worker placement starting with Agricola, then Tetris-style tile placement starting with Patchwork in 2014. His latest game, Nova Luna, represents a departure from all of these, but it's still too early to say whether it represents a new direction for him or is just a one-off outlier like Mercator. And, like Picasso was, Rosenberg is very aware of the marketplace for his creations and confident enough in himself to count on buyers to snap up his latest work. As for me, the first time I sat down to play Le Havre after it came out, I felt a distinct mixture of admiration and letdown. Admiration, because I saw how Le Havre was an extension of an improvement on Agricola, and letdown, because, having spent so much time and money pimping my copy of Agricola, I kind of resented the fact that Rosenberg had gone and produced something better. All my enthusiasm for Agricola seemed a bit wasted now. And as variation after variation came out over the coming years, it felt like Rosenberg was just spinning his wheels. Oh, this is Agricola with a rondelle. Oh, this is Agricola, but with dwarves, and everyone has access to all the buildings instead of them being on cards. Oh, this is Agricola on steroids, with Tetris added in. Thematically, none of them were as immersive or integrated as Agricola. Even A Feast for Odin, which had so many Viking horn bells and whistles, as well as a separate booklet of historical notes, but which was undercut by the abstraction of the Tetris-shaped resources, which was totally not thematic. But again, as with Alan Moon, I cannot fault Rosenberg for his methods. He knows his audience, and he delivers the experience that they want. There's a character from one of my favorite TV shows whose motto is, "I do one thing at a time, I do it extremely well, and then I move on." That is Uwe Rosenberg. The designer of our next game changer also knew how to run with a good thing when he saw it. Standing on the shoulders of giants, well, basically one really big giant, he was so unknown, and the game he created was so good that many people assumed the name on the box was a pseudonym. It wasn't, but he may have wished he'd used one. That was part 2 of episode 6 of The Game Changers. I'm David Weiss for the Daily Worker Placement. Thanks for listening. See you next time, and don't flip that table.